I'm here to talk to you about hybrid education, and what I mean by hybrid, what I wanted to do was first kind of define what hybrid means to us, right? So on one end of the spectrum, there's zero technology, which is your traditional brick and mortar school. And on the other end, there's 100%, which is the virtual school. And what we're talking about in hybrid is something that ranges in between, where in the model that we're talking about, 50% of the instruction is at least done online in the classroom. So the classrooms have computers in them. Half the students are on computers. 25 to 30 minutes, they rotate and then get small group instruction from the teachers. So it's kind of important to understand kind of the basic concepts. The concept of content versus course is another important thing that we like to talk about. A lot of times it's used interchangeably, right? Content and course, online courses aren't really online. It's actually online content. In order to make a true course, you have to have all of these components. And this is where I think hybrid really excels, because we do have adaptive individualized learning opportunities, but we also have tutoring and supplemental and things like that that support and scaffold the learning experience. The other thing about hybrid when we're evaluating content is we need about 100 hours of instruction in the content, because if you think there's 180 days, half an hour each day, that amounts to about 90 to 100 hours. Key concepts, individualized learning. So now students can have their own learning experience by going through an adaptive curriculum, but then get the kind of the face-to-face teacher-led experience, which is much more focused because the students are in smaller groups, but also their level set based on the group. It's data-driven. So the content collects tremendous amounts of data. There's actually assessments that are going on daily that the students don't even know about. For the first time, this data is available for teachers every morning so that they can make adjustments to their lesson plan. And so now we're starting to get kind of focused teacher-led instruction. And it's a sustainable program. And I'm going to kind of go into that in the next slide. Why is it sustainable? Because what we're doing is we're lowering the cost of core instruction. And I'll show you in a financial model how that works. But by lowering the cost, it's not a cost savings model. It's a student achievement model. We're reallocating resources that are traditionally spent in core instruction and reallocating those into programs that actually help students more individually, like intervention programs, tutoring, extended day, you name it. But the money's being saved in core instruction is being reallocated. And so it's a resource reallocation as opposed to just spending it the same old way. So this is what a model looks like. The traditional model is an example of a school that I worked on this year. Initially, they started with 100 students per grade level with 5 classes of 20. We moved them to a class enrollment of 120 students in 4 classes of 30. So what that did was you could see that the revenue base increased by about 20%. So we increased enrollment by 20%. By reducing increasing the class size and reducing the number of classes, we actually reduced the number of instructional staff from 11 to 8. So we have substantial savings on labor costs here. The end result is that instead of an annual net operating loss, now we have a net operating profit. Well, maybe I shouldn't use profit, net operating positive. And the delta is roughly about $300,000 per year per grade level. Substantial savings, even including the cost of the hardware. So here's an example. I apologize, this came out a little blurry here, but in one classroom, students are on both computers, on headsets, getting individualized instruction, and then small group instruction is occurring in the background. Some examples of the screens. So there's actually a custom student interface that allows students to authenticate and log into various courses across all of the different content providers we work with. An example of the content so that each student is actually accessing content at different levels within the online programs. The teacher dashboard, which gives the teacher a daily view on how the class is performing, about how individual students are performing by subject, and then the ability to drill down on various learning strands. And even providing students with at-home enrichment devices like the TeacherMate device here, where students can do it at home if they don't have internet access. We also provide them with drills that are available online. And the pilots are currently running for KIPP Empower. It's 120 students for kindergarten that launched. Each year we plan on opening up a new grade level. It's been going very well so far. And then we're also working on a high school model using different kinds of curriculum, but the same concept.
My name is Joy Smith. My role at Florida Virtual School, I'm a relatively new employee. We've had incredible growth, as you'll see, in our student attendance. We've also had incredible growth in our population. I've been there about 3 years, and my role is around the content development. When we first got started, we asked ourselves, how could we reinvent education? Not really education, but what would we do to reinvent the classroom? And we asked ourselves some questions, and we said, what would that look like? With that thought in mind, we decided to throw out the box and create our own box. And so what I'm going to show you is the results of that thinking and that experimentation. One of the things that we started in 1997 with 77 white male computer science students. And you can see that this year alone, we will serve over 100,000 students in the state of Florida. In Florida, we're a public school, so students across the state can access our program at no charge. And most of our population is public school students who needed an option they couldn't get at their traditional school. So we have students in the classroom who are taking Florida Virtual School. Their teacher may be somewhere else talking to them or texting with them, but they might be attending a traditional school and taking us for supplemental. What we've also done since 1997 is, if you look at what we've done inside the state of Florida, so growing from 77 students to over 100,000 students this year, we've also expanded our reach outside the state of Florida. We're now either in partnerships or through direct instruction in 49 states and 39 countries, where our content or our teachers are teaching students in other states or in other countries. When we started, we said, this is what the classroom looks like, and what do we need to do to change the way we deliver instruction? One of the things that was most important, and we feel that has been the core of our success, is being able to individualize for each student the learning that they need. We all learn differently. We all learn at a different pace. And so very important to us was eliminating any kind of time or pace restrictions on the student and being able to provide individualized instruction. Watch with me just for a few moments.
Schedule, and I think it's just awesome that you can school anywhere you want.
I think of flexibility and independence.
Education and learning, computers and internet and home.
I think of a place where students can learn, where they can grow.
I can learn more and explore more.
Wonderful. I think this is the best thing we have done for his education.
I like online learning better.
And as we see more people going toward online education, I think Florida Virtual will play a major role in that.
One of the most unique things about us is the fact that we're part of the public education system and that we are free to all students in the state of Florida.
I have quite a few students who, without virtual school, would really have no means of getting an education. But we're a technology-based classroom, and right there, a student is logging in every day, working online. They're getting that, computer skills that they're going to need, it, whether it's for high school, whether it's for college, or whether it's for a real world.
I like being able to work at my own pace because there's some things that I've already known, and I can easily breeze through that and then go work on the more challenging things, when at an actual school you have to be patient, wait.
In the online learning community, they can contact us anytime. They can use the email system, they can just call us on the phone.
Ryan and I both speak with her. We can talk about anything, any questions we have about the program, and it's a great one-on-one with Ryan and myself.
We usually talk and, oh, you're doing really well, and I really like this part of this assignment or whatever. I love being able to communicate with my teachers like that.
It's much more one-on-one as opposed to 1 to 20.
I love
seen that light bulb moment, you know, when they're having trouble with something and all of a sudden they get it. You give them that right example or just the right manipulative and all of a sudden that light bulb goes off and they get it and you feel it.
If I didn't have Florida Virtual School, I probably would have been a dropout.
I would probably be very behind in school.
FLVS has changed my life in a lot of different ways because I've been able to pursue what I love most, dance.
If indeed you can provide the time, the space, the instructional experience for a child as they need it, that all children really will be able to learn and that they'll learn at a high level and they'll realize that they're learners and they'll take that with them for life.
And those are not actors. Those are actually teachers, principals, and students at Florida Virtual School. One of the things about Florida Virtual School that, and online learning in general, that I spend a lot of, being a former classroom teacher and with both of my parents being teachers, when I told them I was going to work for an online school, they were like, what? Now they're older and technology, you know, my mother uses email. She thinks she's on the cutting edge of technology. But, you know, it's very hard to explain that it's not always technology, and what makes us truly different are the 1,100 full-time certified teachers that we have providing instruction to our students. So we do use technology as our core. So content is always available to students, or the courses, as Anthony talked about, because all the things you saw in Anthony's charts are things that go into making up our courses. So 365 days a year, our school is open and our students are working. We have teachers who are available 8 to 8. And we also have those teachers communicate via text, IM, and even the phone, if that's the way the student wants to participate. And we do a lot of out-of-seat learning, where students get out of their seat, out in front of the computer, and go do something to collaborate with others so that they're getting a real-world experience. Our results. I think we can demonstrate that there is learning going on at Florida Virtual School. From TaxWatch, you'll see that we traditionally outperform the traditional school on our statewide tests. We outperform the traditional school in the FCAT, which is the Florida Test for Achievement. And we also traditionally outperform both state and nationwide on the AP test scores. So our motto is any time, any place, any path, any pace. And we've adopted that and we live it every day. Thank you.
All right. I'm Jeff Houseman. I'm with the Jesuit Virtual Learning Academy. And I'm here to talk to you a little bit about using networks and basically using networks to build capacity, okay? When I went in to do that, I need to tell you a little bit about the Society of Jesus, because that ultimately is what the Jesuit Virtual Learning Academy is about. You know, the Society of Jesus is the largest religious order of the Catholic Church. They're recognized for their work in education for over 400 years. Here in the United States, there's 53 secondary schools serving 45,000 students worldwide. We have over 400 schools serving over 300,000 students worldwide. And really what the Jesuit Virtual Learning Academy is attempting to do is just to unlock that network to harness its collaborative capacity. And what does that mean? What we're doing is student credit-bearing coursework. We're doing professional development. And we're using collaborative technologies in their traditional classrooms. And so I'll talk about a couple of those pieces today. But what I want to do first is talk to you a little bit about our model and our business model, because our business model is that of a user network. Okay? And so when you talk about what it is the schools invest in membership fees and in program. Obviously at that level, then they share in the program, they share in the content, and they share in everything that we're delivering. And so it's not unlike the philanthropy roundtable in terms of its structure. It's pretty easy to understand the concepts of sharing resource and sharing costs, and I'll talk a little bit more about those, give you some examples of those here in a second. I do want to mention the sharing risk and sharing responsibility pieces a bit, because the sharing risk piece I think is important, because we all know the technology continues to evolve. And what the JVLA hopes to do for our schools is give our schools an opportunity to engage technology at a very low risk point for them, okay? And give them opportunities to explore new ways of using technology in their traditional schools. The second piece is sharing responsibility. As I mentioned earlier, we have 400 Jesuit secondary schools worldwide. Half of those schools are mission-based. A quarter of the schools in the United States are mission-based schools. Crystal Ray schools come to mind, and a lot of you know the Crystal Ray Network, about the Crystal Ray Network. A lot of those schools are Jesuit schools. And so really the question is how can we use the resources that exist in our network to bring greater value to those schools as well? So, I'm going to get back a little bit to the programming piece. One of the things that we do is credit-bearing coursework using a virtual model, okay? And what the Jesuit Virtual Learning Academy's focus is, it's on higher-end differentiated coursework, okay? That schools that our schools can't provide for one of two reasons. Either there's a lack of a quality teaching resource in their community, or secondly, there's just not enough student interest to make it worth a school's while to actually deliver the course, right? You have two or three kids who'd love to take a class. It just doesn't make sense, okay? So what we're doing is we're looking around our network of 53 schools, finding those pearls that exist, inviting those teachers that are teaching those courses to teach them online for us, and then making them available to our member schools, okay? Here's an example. Well, let me give you some examples of our coursework. Okay, Mandarin and Arabic are our two language courses. A lot of our high-end AP courses we're delivering AP psychology, AP art history, AP music theory. Those more esoteric types that you might have one or two kids in a school that are really highly interested in, but you know, generally speaking, you don't want to deliver for that size of a group. This is an example of our coursework being used at the Crystal Ray School in Chicago, actually. And we have 30 seniors, actually, from the Crystal Ray School using our virtual basic program and our multimedia authorship program. And so what this does for Crystal Ray is it gets them in the game of computer science. Okay, without the Jesuit Virtual Learning Academy, they wouldn't have that type of programming available to their students, and that's how they'd use it. Okay, so basically what we do, we deliver 20 courses to our schools through the network right now. They pick and choose the ones that are appropriate for them, and they deliver them and they make those offerings to their students. Okay, so for the cost point, the membership cost point of, on the high end, the membership cost point is $5,000. So you can see the value of being able to add significant depth to your curriculum at a low cost point. So that's where we are currently, and I'm gonna not go into the professional development pieces of what we're doing is great work there. Because I want to get into really kind of the next step for us from a programmatic perspective. And that's really changing from being just a simple program provider to really being a resource hub. And that's where we're talking about unlocking the creative capacity of the network. Okay? And what do I mean by that? This is really where we're going in terms of this is a mock-up of the design. But what it is... I want to take technology and put it aside and talk about really what the Jesuit Virtual Learning Academy is about. Because really what it's about is our people and our mission. Okay? We have this great resource of program in our network. We have this great committed group of faculty members who are committed to the mission. Okay? And what we're really trying to do is just take and develop this technology infrastructure that enables those people, that group of educators to share resource, to share tools, to share program, right? And give them this platform that enables them to do that in a meaningful and easy way. Okay? Why is that important? You know, we've talked about all the great stuff that's happening from a technology perspective, and we've gotten some great examples of how content is becoming available and so forth, and it's real, and it's beautiful. There are more tools available for schools to use than they know what to do with, and that's part of the problem. Is our educators literally, they're overwhelmed by the choices to the point where it's almost a disincentive for them to use the tools because it takes so long for them to find material, okay? So what we're doing is just taking this concept and making it available to them and giving them this resource to share, okay? Here's an example of a sharing exercise. And so really what we're talking about here is using very simple technologies. We're introducing St. Xavier High School in Cincinnati with a school, Loyola School, in the Nagaland region of India. Jesuit school, it's up in the the northeastern area of India, right up by Tibet. They're doing some very simple sharing exercises using basic technology. Okay? And you think in this relationship, Loyola School is going to be the one winning. In reality, it's the people at St. X in Cincinnati who are winning in this particular instance, because the conversation that they're having is about Gandhi. So it's a beautiful opportunity to take this network and to bring it alive in more meaningful ways. And so that's really what the Jesuit Virtual Learning Academy is about. Okay?
So I don't think this is about technology. This is a picture. This is a picture from the 1800s in the middle of Wisconsin. Late 1800s. One teacher, 28 kids, chalkboard, a clock. Think about all the things that have changed in our society since the late 1800s. But this one basic model hasn't moved. We still assume one teacher, 28 kids in a box. And this model was perfectly fine when all we were really trying to do was educate the elite. Give everyone else a little bit of exposure to reading and math before they took jobs in manufacturing. Now a lot of those jobs are gone. We've changed the goalpost. We've said every student must be ready for college. And this model is not going to get us there. For the last 25 years, most of our debate in education reform has assumed this. We can fight about class size, curriculum, throw three computers in the back of the classroom, get better teachers. But even if we get a great teacher, we've not yet confronted whether this one underlying assumption, one teacher, 28 kids, and 400 square feet, is the very best way to deliver instruction for kids. This model has, in our view, a fatal flaw. And that flaw is, it is darn near impossible for one teacher to personalize learning for all those students at one time. And this could be just one class out of five classes in the course of a day. Not only do you have to personalize learning for every kid, but, oh, by the way, they're also teaching the standard grade level curriculum. I'm a former fifth grade math teacher. I can tell you on that first day, the students walked in, they did not know all the third grade content and all the fourth grade content. And somehow I was supposed to teach fifth grade while also personalizing learning to each of them. Very tough to do. So what we're trying to do in School of One is to begin to challenge this one fundamental notion of one teacher, 28 kids in a box, and turn it into a model that looks more like this, where we use what we call modalities. Live teacher-led instruction, the kind of instruction we're all familiar with and we all think about when we think about what school is one way. It may be the best way. It's just certainly not the only way kids can learn. Kids can learn online with virtual tutors. They can learn online with software. They can learn in groups from each other with no computers. They can learn by themselves with a book. By integrating modalities into a learning environment, we can do two things that can't be done in the traditional model. One, we can personalize learning on the basis of students' academic needs. So in my former class, I remember teaching 27 kids how to add fractions, and there were seven of them who didn't know what a fraction was. Happens in every classroom across the country. What does a teacher do? They say, don't worry about it, hang in there, you'll get it next time. What they're thinking is, I've got to get to chapter 32 by the last day of the school year. And those kids are basically held hostage to the pace of the rest of the class. Why in the 21st century should we have that? Why can't those kids learn about what a fraction is in another modality? We can also personalize on the basis of the modality itself. Some kids do great with technology. Let them spend more time with technology. Some kids learn great in groups. Let them spend more time in groups. Just like Amazon learns more about us whenever we shop on Amazon, we can learn more about what types of modalities work best for each student. That's the basic idea of School of One. Here's how we do it. First, we start with what we call the learning progression. These are the discrete set of skills we want kids to know. So imagine these like the table of contents in front of a math textbook. Our learning progression has 390 skills. They're all math skills going from fourth grade all the way up to ninth grade. Our students, by the way, are just sixth through eighth. Our program spans four through nine. And we have all the standards, and we map the relationship among those standards. You can't learn how to add fractions with unlike denominators until you've mastered fractions with like denominators, and so on and so forth. Second, we take all the data we have from each student, and we figure out which are the skills the students already know, and that leaves us with what we call the playlist. These are the skills a student still needs to work on. So we have all this data about each student that tells us precisely what their academic needs are. And we have that for each student in our program, and no two students have the same playlist. Next thing we do is we administer a number of surveys. We survey each student, tell us what you like, how you like to learn, what you're interested in. We survey their parent, we survey their teachers, and this allows us to generate a hypothesis of what types of modalities might be most effective for each student. Ooh, wrong way. So here's Frank, and based on all that survey data, it looks like he likes sports and writing and performing arts. And the modalities that look to be most effective are games, working in groups, and working with computers. At least that's what all the survey data said, so we'll start with that as a hypothesis. Now we need content, because we know what each student needs, so we work with the different content providers to build a lesson bank. We currently have over 5,000 different lessons from over 50 different content providers who've put content into the School of One system. Some of these are digital lessons, some of these are live lessons, some are collaborative lessons. Finally, the question is, what do you do with that information? You can't just have these two big data sets and put it on the teacher's lap and say, good luck figuring out how to match these two sets. So we created what we call the learning algorithm. And the learning algorithm, the best way to think of it is think about what happens when we go to the airport. There are weather problems in different cities. Certain planes only fit at certain gates. The technology organizes all that for us. We look up at the monitor. We see the status of our flight. We see our gate. Same concept here. Our algorithm takes all the data about each student, all the data about all the content, and creates a unique schedule for each student each day based on the lessons that are most likely to be successful for them. At the end of every day, students take an assessment, and we use that data to create their schedule for the next day. So here's just a picture of what it looks like, what our rooms look like. You see different parts of the room. Some of it is for virtual learning. Some of it is for collaborative learning. Some of it is for live instruction. You see some of the monitors around the room. Students walk in. It is a large open space. We've knocked down the walls between three classrooms to create one large open space. There are eight stations within that space with signs above them, some stations for live instruction, some stations for collaborative instruction, some for digital instruction. There are signs above each station. Students walk in, they look up at the monitors, they see where they're supposed to go, they go to that lesson, then they go to another lesson, they take their assessment, and that's the end of their math class. We crunch the data and use that to create their schedule for the next day. So that is, in a nutshell, School of One.
Great.